Hello and welcome to another episode of Having a Chat. My name is Tommy Casher and today I'm chatting with Reese Hignall. After first appearing back on our screens in MasterChef in 2018, then returning again for MasterChef Back to Win in 2020, now the owner of Cake Boy in Newey, Reese Hignall. What's going on, man? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Mate, thanks for coming. I've got you, I was going to say in the studio. This isn't a studio. We're sitting at my kitchen table, but so good to get a fellow Nova Castrian on and be able to chat face to face. How's business going?
Yeah, well, firstly, I would say this is pretty studio-like. Your setup's really good.
I appreciate that.
But no, business is going crazy. Week 9, so it's been a hell of a ride. I'm so grateful for how it's been going. Yeah, totally stoked.
Awesome, mate. So the first question I always get into with the podcast is, what'd you have for breakfast? Did you have breakfast, first of all?
I was about to say, like, that is a luxury we don't get anymore, like, being in small business. Like, a meal break is great, but we don't get them.
Okay, so what time's the alarm going off at the moment?
My alarm went off at 4:30 this morning, so got to the shop at 5.
And there was no time for breakfast even?
No, we're cooking. We have to cook breakfast for other people. So,
but is there no part when you're cooking being like, far out, I just want to tuck into some of this now?
Nah, like my lunch day was even so bad. It was half a packet of tofu just straight out of the packet.
Okay, so clearly you're pulling big hours at the moment. Yeah. So how are you getting through the day without any food?
Yeah, it's really hard, but, you know, like, you just make do when you can. Like, I'm massive on eating at dinner now. Like, before I had a shop, I didn't really eat dinner too massively. Like, it wasn't a main priority for me. I love breakfast, but you just got to eat when you have time.
So breakfast was your... You were a big fan of breakfast before opening the shop?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to love going out for brunch. My day used to always be wake up, go to the gym, go out for brunch.
Like, so what was your go-to breakfast meal?
Avocado on toast.
Yeah, it's hard to go past, isn't it? Would you add an egg on top?
Nah.
Just straight avo?
Avo on toast. But see, it is the best.
I've got nothing against avo on toast. I just feel like if I'm going out for breakfast, I want something like more than avo on toast.
Oh, no, you need to have like a dukkha or something on it.
Where's the best avo on toast you've had in Newey?
Okay, I love the one from Eastern Hub.
Eastern Hub? So where's good. That?
What?
Okay, I've only moved to Newey in May last year.
That is offensive.
where, for all the people who don't know where Eastern Hub is.
So it's in Newcastle East.
Yep.
Like next to the Novotel.
Oh, yeah, like downstairs from... Oh, yeah, okay. I have been there. Good. I just didn't know what it was called, so that's my bad. Apologies to everyone at the Eastern Hub. So, okay, food for you. What's your relationship with food like? How much has your relationship with food changed in this 9 weeks since you've opened the business?
Food and my relationship with food is a very complex story.
Unpack it. Let's do it, man. Let's do it.
If we look at the last 9 weeks, it's changed a lot. It's gone from a passion, hobby, to work, to like a business.
Yep.
And when you look at things as a business now, it changes something from, say, like an avo, like we were talking about avo and toast. You look at an avocado, the cost of the avocado and what I can do with that to make a viable business out of it. So my mind of food and my passion and my love affair with food is slightly different at the moment because I'm looking at it in terms of a business owner and trying to make my life out of it.
So how hard is that when you go home at night? Do you then not want to cook dinner because you're like, I just feel like I'm still at work?
Oh my God, I hate cooking at home at the moment. It's so bad. Like, I used to every night, right, like, I would cook me and my partner the most epic dinners. I would, like, make pasta from scratch. I would, like, sit there for hours. Oh, I would, like, sit there for hours making curries and everything. But now I'm at home. I get, like, a glass of wine or a beer and I'm straight on the couch. And I'm just, like, dead. I couldn't think of anything worse than cooking again.
So does that mean the cooking responsibility has fallen on your partner? Okay, right. And what's your partner like in the kitchen?
Dean's great.
Yeah. You don't want to throw him under the bus. He's being very delicate.
Yeah, because he probably will listen to it. His cooking lately has been really good. He's your typical Googler cook, and he's cooking some really cool dishes. But I'm like, damn, how did you learn how to cook that? He's like, taste.com.
What's he like with my girlfriend Maddie? She's a good cook, but she's a very by the recipe. Yeah. And if it says like brown the onions for 5 minutes, you can't do the next step until the onions are fully brown.
Yeah.
And I'm big on like, just throw it in. The next thing's going in there at some point anyway.
Well, like I always look.
Okay, just for context, Maddie wasn't home and she's just walked upstairs from the gym as I've thrown her under the bus there. So I'm going to keep this recording for as long as we can and hopefully she's forgotten that I've thrown her under the bus.
But no, Dean is like very by the books as well. Even when it comes down to buying the ingredients, he'll buy the most expensive thing.
Oh, right, okay.
And when I look at a recipe, I'm like, oh, I'll change that for that or this for that because it's cheaper or it's better product. And he buys every little thing. I'm like, this would have cost you like $40 like just to make pad thai.
Yeah.
And you can just go get it from like the Thai restaurant for like $12.
Yes. Oh, I'm so basic though. I have like my standard spices and whether it's like eggs on toast or whether it's a pasta or whatever it might be, I'm like, yeah, paprika will go in this.
Yeah.
Like
I've got paprika goes in everything. Yeah. It's good.
And I feel like it's my little secret ingredient that no one else knows about, but I mean, very common. So, mate, before MasterChef in 2018,
yep.
What did life look like for you?
Yeah, so I worked in recruitment for a number of years. I worked at that stage under like a work cover section of recruitment and we were helping people who were injured returning to work. And, yeah, I loved it. It was a 9-to-5-er, very standard in an office. It was a brand new office and...
here in Nui?
Yeah, here in Nui, yeah. And it was like such a good job with like such great people. But I think I was like at this crossroad. I was like, I got a, like a good partner and we have a nice house, like have a good job. We have a good dog. Like I kind of had done a lot of things that I wanted to do with myself. And not that those things are goals, but I think they made me feel comfortable. And I was like, I need to like mix something up. Like I was like, I can't just go to Europe every 2 years and like go a bit crazy. Like I want to change my life a little bit. So,
so you said that you liked your job, right? And yeah. It was a good job. Did you actually deep down like it, or did you always feel like you had something more to give and there was more to you than what you were doing?
No, I really, really liked my job. I just felt as though I was doing it because it made me feel good. Like where I'd help someone, I would get a good feeling for doing that, which is like a natural human instinct.
Yeah, of course.
But was it something that made me at the end of the day go home like, oh, I just love what I'm doing? Not really, but I had a good feeling. Like I felt good when I was doing my job. I liked the people I worked with, but it by far wasn't what I was passionate about.
Okay, so then where did you always have a passion for cooking and baking?
Yeah. I love cooking. Back then I was like I've always been a cook. Like at home, I love cooking. Ever since I think I started cooking when I was 12.
Yeah.
Mum bought like this little kids cookbook. I made hash browns and chicken noodle soup. Like,
yeah, nice.
That was like the start of my cooking life. And
have you gone back to that at any point? Just the hash browns and chicken noodle soup?
Definitely not. but no, like come 2018, like I think as I was saying, like I was just a bit content with life. And I suppose like I'm not the person that is comfortable by comfort. I like change. I like doing something new. Also, I always have this thing where I say, if I'm going to do something, I'll do it. And I kind of like had crossed my mind about MasterChef a few times. And then I was like, oh, damn it, I've said it now. So it was on my radar.
It's like living by the Nike slogan, just do it. if you think of something, just do it. Because I've had a few of those thoughts recently. It's like, oh, you look at people on social media who've built up this brand in. Some people could sit there and criticize and go, oh, I could do that. You know, what they're doing is not that special. But unless you go out and you actually do it, nothing's going to be gifted to you. So, okay, do you remember when and where you were when you applied for MasterChef?
100%. Like, So I was watching, because MasterChef also had been a show that I'd been in love with for a few years.
Yep.
Being someone who likes cooking, I just love watching people on TV cook. Me and my partner and our roommate were sitting down on the couch watching MasterChef, and it was like a semi-final or a final or something like that. One of the guys made this dish, and I was getting so angry and like worked up at the TV. I was like, I made that on Tuesday night. Like, that is what I made for dinner.
You basic Tuesday bitch, night. Fucking do yeah. something better.
I'm like, this is a final. Like, this person's going to win $250,000
yep.
for making what I made for Tuesday night.
Do you remember what it was?
It was like confit duck leg.
Yeah.
And I did it.
You were like, making that on a Tuesday yeah, night.
Yeah. So anyway.
Was
like,
there any reason? Like, was it someone's birthday or that was just your regular Tuesday like, go-to?
I'm pretty like stupid when, like as I was saying before, like I love spending time cooking.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Just making the most wildest dinner. But yep. So that worked me up, and then my partner and my roommate at the time made like a little joke, like, well, if you think you're so good, Reese, why don't you do it?
Yeah, okay.
Next day I came home, I'm like, I applied for MasterChef.
So what was the application process like? Was it a video or was it just literally applying online with a form?
It's quite intense, the process of like the application. There's like, there is like a written form which took about 4 hours to do.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. And then a lot of stuff about background, your family structure.
Yeah, okay.
Passion for cooking and like all the dishes you cook, recipes, yada, yada, yada. Then there was like a video that you could send in. So I ended up going ahead and doing that.
Yep.
And then comes the selection process, and that's another whole stage of...
Okay, so... The selection process, when you got, how do you first find out? Is that an email in your inbox?
Yeah, so it's an email inviting you to a audition, which is an off-camera audition, and it's over a few days where you do a few different cooking challenges. And I suppose like that's engaging whether or not
you can actually cook.
Yeah, yeah, or cook under pressure.
Yep.
And what your creativity is like. So you do stuff like a mystery box, and you do stuff like a little bit of an invention test type of thing, which is a challenge on the show and a signature dish. So you go through a few stages of that, and each round people get culled, and then you get moved to the next round. Just like in American or Australian Idol, you know how they
have
camp style.
Yeah, right.
Kind of like that, but off camera. And then you go through a lot of like testing and screening and interviewing, and then out of that they choose 50 people. And that's your on TV audition people.
Oh, right. Okay. Yep.
And then you go to the studio.
So with the first email that you got.
Yeah.
Do you remember how you felt when you saw in your inbox, checked like your Gmail or Hotmail, whatever it was?
Yeah.
What was that feeling like where you were like, oh shit, like I was kind of being a bit, you know, cheeky applying when, you know, my partner and my roommate were just giving me shit. Then when you got the reply, what was that like?
Well, I was in Vanuatu, and I was like at some like dingy cafe trying to connect to their Wi-Fi that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
And
were you specifically waiting for that email and checking for it?
I
was
like, every time I got to like a cafe, I'd check the Wi-Fi. I'm like, maybe they would send me an email.
Yeah.
They did. I just lost it. I was so excited. Just started sending random messages to people back home. They're like, oh my God, you're going to MasterChef. I'm like, no, it's just like, it's saying that
I might be going on MasterChef.
So I probably got a bit too excited, but yeah, I was stoked.
Okay. So then it comes that you get down to the top 50, then you get down obviously on the show.
Yep.
So what was that like? How long were you, where do they film? Sydney?
Melbourne.
Yeah. How long are you away for
when... So filming, both seasons have been pretty similar. So the first season was slightly shorter, and that took 6 months. So we filmed for 6 months in Melbourne. Yeah, pretty long, but...
6 months?
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a while. Because, like, the show's, like, on 5 nights a week.
Yep.
And it goes for, like, 3 months.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a lot of content to be made.
Far out.
Yeah. The commitment, but like...
How hard was the decision at that point? So, okay, so once you got down to the top 50.
Yeah.
And then that was the TV part.
Yeah.
And they said, cool, you're down, but you could potentially be away for 6 months.
Yeah.
Was there any point where you were like, oh, I can't do that?
No, I was like, oh, because like we went down and did... the first episode, which is like an audition episode.
Yep.
So that was kind of like my make or break. So yep. like I still had all my connections back home, like my job and everything. And once I got through that first episode, like I quit my job, packed my bags. I'm like, see you guys, like I'm not coming back for 6 months. I was so determined. I'm like, I'm going, I'm going to make it.
Okay. So what was the conversation like with Dean trying to?
He was fine. Like he's super supportive.
Yep.
Which is like what I needed because like I had this big dream and I was just packing up and going. But yeah, he was all in as well. Like he came down the first episode as well. You have like your family members with you. So he came down, see me off, and then I was on my way.
Okay, so while you were down there filming for 6 months, what are you actually – I've always wondered this about reality TV. What are you actually doing during the day when you're not filming? Because you didn't film every day for 6 months, did you?
Well, kind of. Because like MasterChef is like a big production. It's not say like – a. Well, you know the show, like it's a big production.
Yeah, yeah, so of course.
To film an episode, you got an hour and a half of good TV. That takes a long time to film. So
there's a lot of shit that you guys are dishing up that they're like, nah, cut.
No. That's the stuff they want to get on TV. No, it takes usually about 12 hours to film an episode. So
12 hours?
Yeah, days are big. So
far out.
You get like a lot. So out of that episode, like there's like you have to drive into the shot and they like film you in cars and they get you to do the challenge and then they have to taste everyone, and tasting's a long process because it starts with 24 people, 24 dishes you have to taste.
Oh, yeah, and all make their comments and right.
And on TV it's only like five people they focus on.
Yeah.
But there's 24 of you in reality. So
how annoying is that? Like if you've cooked a hot dish and you're last, is your stuff actually cold when they're eating it?
Yeah.
Is there no way that it stays hot? Like that's not it's literally cold by the time.
Cold. Yeah, they actually put it in the fridge. Like
so it doesn't go like bad.
Yeah. Because it's like food safety as well. They can't just leave shit out at stuff out of room temperature.
No, I said fuck before. We're good.
they're pretty open about stuff like that. So they taste everything cold. But the judges are like on it. They do little sneaky things whilst you're cooking. They'll constantly be trying what you're making.
So
you're developing the flavour in something. They're on the ride with you. So,
and I guess also that's their job to look for the food. They're not going to judge it whether it's hot or cold.
That's right.
It's not a temperature show. It's the taste of the food.
Well, like the judges are also like super experienced. So if it's screwed up, they know.
Yep. Okay. So coming out of the show.
Yep.
What was that like? Because I guess for 6 months, you're in this bubble where you're like, I'm on TV, there are the judges, there are the cameras, here are all these people that I'm now friends with, that I'm living with every day. Then coming back to Newcastle, is it kind of a bit of a whirlwind? You know, if you go on a holiday or you go to a camping music festival for 3 days, then you come back and you're like a little bit depressed. You're like, shit, this is what life is normally like.
Well, you've explained it really well, like calling it a bubble, because that's exactly what it is. Like you're in this intense environment and it's intense for a reason because you focus so hardly on one thing, and that's winning a competition. Then you put back into reality and you just live your normal life. It's a complete transition. It's really hard. Two polar opposites to where you're kind of structured and you have like a routine every day and you have someone telling you what to do, to where you wake up in the morning, you're like, well, what do I do? Like,
what was the first day you were back in Newey? I'm assuming Dean went to work and the first day you were back and you were like, now what do I do?
Well, it's kind of crappy the first day I got back because I'd bought Dean and I a trip to Japan.
Yep.
And he was in transit coming back from Japan. So I rocked up at home and I'm like the only one there.
Oh, no.
But it was kind of cool. Like, I, as I said to you before, like the feeling of comfort doesn't really sit well for me. So I was like back at home and I'm like, could like chill out and unwind, but I got like a little bit antsy. I was like, well, I made it to the end of MasterChef. I didn't make it to like the last four episodes though. So they had to film the last four episodes. So we had to go back for the final. So I had like a few days here in Newcastle before I had to go back. I'm like, well, I don't really want to sit here and just wait. Like I want to start doing stuff. So I like planned and prepared in those 4 days, like a little event here in Newcastle, and I did like a pop-up dinner at
in 4 days.
Well, I planned it all in the 4 days.
Yep.
So we had the event when I got back later on, but it was just like heads down and just start working straight away. And it kind of was like a really good distraction for me, because like it wasn't until a few weeks after that when all of my preparation had come into fruition and I had all these jobs up. It was like, oh my God, like if this wasn't now, what would I have? Because I had nothing else. Like I didn't have a job to go to. I didn't have like all my friends were working. Like, and I just come off TV. I couldn't like just swallow my pride and go, oh, can I have my job back? Like,
did any part of you think that that was a possibility that you would go back to the recruitment?
Yeah. Agency? Yeah, I did think I would return to it. It's really hard because there's like a fork in a road. There's like, I think the hard thing for people coming off reality TV is like you go on there with some expectation of it could potentially change your life, and then you come off and you don't realize going on the TV, that's like the easy part. That's the plot. That's the part where you build like a little name for yourself.
Well, because that part really isn't this. I'm not going to say it's not hard work, but it's not. Was that not hard work compared to the hard work you're doing now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Like, not comparable. Like, I would 100% go. I would drop everything right now to go do another season of MasterChef.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it's so much fun. But
can you talk about what life like for you is right now?
Yeah.
As much as you're comfortable talking about, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I suppose for me now, it's definitely the most I've worked in my life and the hardest I've worked in my life. But what I do have is full control of my life. I run my own business. It's doing really well. I'm really proud of it. I have staff and I'm supporting them, giving them jobs and creating an amazing culture. I get to do so many fun things. Like, last week I was out on this brand new homestead doing like this little commercial, and then in a few weeks I get to go to Sydney to shoot some more things, and all around just busy, 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 but I have full control. And I think if I look back to 2018, that's kind of what I was missing. I was like kind of falling into like, I don't want to say like, I feel like the Stepford Housewives is the thing, like it's just like robotic.
Yeah, like you go to work, you do your job, you go out on the weekend, you might go for dinner, you might go to the pub with your mates, but it's the same thing.
Same thing. And now every single day, like I get to choose what I do. Like I have like a business and that takes full, like all my time, and I have to be completely responsible for that. And I love that. But I also like have the control of like leading that business in the direction I want to go. Like everything about that business is my creative, and like that excites me. I'm so happy about it. And I look back over the last 2 years, 3 years really, like I got the opportunity to go on MasterChef twice and it has completely changed my life. But I would say MasterChef gave me the platform, and then it was that hard work after the seasons.
Okay, so when you came out after 2018,
yep,
where did Cake Boy, because it was online, Cake Boy, it was online before it's the store now in Newcastle.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
After 2018 MasterChef, where did Cake Boy fit in? Where did it come from?
Yeah, so a few mates over time had asked me to bake them like cakes for their birthdays and such, and I started doing that.
Were you charging them at the time?
Nah.
Mate.
They were presents. Like, and I posted them on my Instagram.
Yep.
And then more and more friends were asking, and then friends of friends, and then random started messaging me like, oh, I seen you make this cake. Would you make my wedding cake? And
oh, wow.
Yada, yada, yada. And it developed into an online business. I had my own little online shop, and I would have like a little market at my house that on the weekends people would come collect their cakes, and it was really cool. So, yeah, it was like a naturally forming business. It just happened from my little Instagram following.
Yeah, wow. So you didn't actually sit down and plan like, I'm going to open this cake store. Are we cake store, cafe? What are we calling it?
Well, Cake Boy in the physical shop is like vastly different to Cake Boy, which used to be the online shop.
Right, okay.
So yeah, the online shop was mainly like birthday cakes, wedding cakes and such like that.
Yep.
And then, yeah, what I have now is like, So yeah, it's just completely different. Like the I just call it a cake shop, cafe, yeah, okay, whatever. But like, it's so different to what I used to do. But it's what I have always wanted to do.
Okay, so from the online cake boy days,
yeah,
where did the possibility and the reality set in that you're like, I could actually open a store here. Like, I've got enough clients, I've got enough of a following to be able to open it, and I think it'd be supported. And this is what's there's a gap in the market, kind of thing.
Well, it's basically because of like last year's like all-star season of MasterChef. Like, that was received so well by the general public. Everyone got really great followings, and comes with that is like really amazing opportunities. So I got to do some really cool brand work with some really cool brands. So IKEA, like Dan Murphy's, a few other ones like that. And every time I'd do like a little gig like that, I would just bank all my money from it and collect it in a little bit of a fund until I had enough. And I was like, I can do something now. So my online shop was doing really well at that stage. And I was like, I don't want to be making wedding cakes forever. Like, they're not the style of cake that I'm passionate about. What I was passionate about and what I am passionate about is what my nan used to make. And my nan passed away last year. And on MasterChef, I made one of her cakes. And she ended up passing away like 2 days before it aired. And it was pretty like crappy situation. But it gave me like this really like rush of anxiety that potentially something great could be lost. Well, someone great was lost, but her talent and what she used to make. She had this beautiful market store, and it's just like all old school cakes. And I was like, that's going to be gone. Like, no one does that commercially really. So I was like, well, I've got this cash. I built it up. I want to do something with it. I want to make a life for myself now that I've gone on reality TV shows. Like twice. I can't just rely on picking up an Instagram ad every now and then. I want to make a living for myself and be known for something. So I decided that money was going towards creating My Dear Cake Boy and changing it from this wedding cake business into like a dedication really towards my nan's baking. And that's where we are now.
So your relationship with your nan, how is that where your love for cakes and baking started? You said earlier that you were 12 when you first cooked hash browns and chicken noodle soup. But what about your relationship with your nan? How much has that shaped your relationship with cooking?
Yeah, it's something that not until I've matured a lot, I've realized how impactful she is on like my idea of what cooking is. When I was younger, I used to always, when I was 12, I would do something like chicken noodle soup, or like whenever I've been cooking, I'd do like confit duck leg. As I said before, I would have been doing curries and such because I don't want to fall into a mold of having the one thing, because that's what I had when I was a kid.
Mate, don't come for here dinner during the week.
Bag bowl. But like, it's all delicious, but I just don't like repetitive ventures. So we'd had the same thing growing up all the time. So forced me to start cooking and creating new things, and hence why I got into cooking. But a few years after, or actually a year after MasterChef, I really got into baking, and it just unlocked this like massive passion for me. And
does it make you feel closer with your nan when you are doing that?
Yeah. I feel like I feel amazing. Like today at the shop, we whipped up one of her sponges.
Yeah,
and it's just like whenever people see it, like we were like, pull it out of the oven. People are like, oh, can I have the sponge? And I'm like, it's in the oven. Like, no, you can't yet. And then they're like, oh, is that your nan's sponge? I'm like, yeah. And we'll be cutting it up. And they're like, oh, what are you cutting? Is that the sponge? Like, so, yeah, it makes me so proud because I have waffled on about, like, my nan's cooking a bit. But people care about it. Like, people care about it because it has connections to them.
Yeah, of course. But people can clearly see it means something to you.
Yeah, it does mean a lot to me. And I just appreciate that people care about it because that, to me, is a connection with them. That they also have that fear that something like this could be lost. So, yeah, I'm, like, super into it. I'm so appreciative of my nan. Like, she was an amazing cook. And my cake shop cake boy is, as I said, like a dedication to her little old humble cake market.
So for people who are familiar with your MasterChef journey, who maybe don't live in Newcastle or haven't had the chance to go into Cake Boy yet, what kind of cakes have you got there?
Yeah, so I'll give you like the little spiel.
Yep.
So I've been saying lately, and I said it once and I was like, oh, I love that. I don't know if I'll say it as cool as I have been saying it, but like,
right.
I think like...
You should voice record it. Yeah. Voice record it when someone
and
asks.
And I just play it. Yeah. But I honestly feel like bakeries, anything, like cooking in general is like so exciting because it's constantly progressive. Like everyone's trying a new thing. And like in like an industry where like everyone's moving forward, we're doing the opposite. We're moving backwards.
Yeah.
So we're going way back to like Nan. So everything we serve is like just a humble little cake. It's nothing like fancy. Nothing looks like there's no flowers. There's no colors. It's just carrot cake, banana cake, like sponges, lemon tarts. Like just everything's really humble. And I say that a lot because it's not wow to look at. There's no like fireworks. What is the fireworks? It's when you eat it. Like you appreciate like the texture of the cake. Like it's light because it's meant to be light, or it's dense because it's meant to be dense, or there's like textures in the cake or spices in the cake, opposed to, although they're super delicious, but like a dense mud cake that everyone kind of has had. So
it's funny that you say that they don't, when you look at them, there might not be fireworks. I'm going to disagree because I went in recently and I was going to get two different cakes
yep.
for Maddie and I to share. And I ended up leaving with carrot cake, the dolce de leche, and there was a mud cake as well. And I got all three. And I was like, sorry, we're going to have to share. We're going to have to have one and a half each. Yeah. Mate, it's so great. So have you received that feedback from people when they're coming in that this feels like their Nan's kind of stuff as well?
Yeah. And like, that's like the best thing about it. Like, they're like, oh, my Nan used to make this cake, or like, I just got a bit tongue tied, but the weirdest one that has surprised me recently is a banana cake. Cause I put it on there cause Nan used to do a banana walnut cake.
Yep.
And I just put it on like, oh, everyone likes banana, so I make Nan's banana cake. Yep. And it's like going so crazy and everyone's like, oh my God, no one makes banana cake anymore.
Well, they don't. That's so true because everyone's, like you said, trying to do the next thing and make a banana cake inside a mud cake, inside a trifle or something. Like,
but like, yeah, everyone loves it. And it's just because like their Nan used to make it. So yeah, I do get like a lot of people come in like, oh, my Nan used to make that, or I used to have this here, or this lady come in today and she's like, you need to make those little green frogs that you get from country bakeries. I don't know if you've seen them before, but they're like a frog and it's just purely mock cream on the inside.
No, I haven't seen those. They sound like something I'd be interested in, though.
Pretty old school. But like just stuff like that. Like that stuff excites me because it is like, pretty old, but no one does it. So
okay, so from a business decision, you've obviously got cakes. You've got coffee, which go hand in hand, right?
That's right.
But you also do focaccias and other kinds of food.
Yeah.
How important was that from like a business decision and a business standpoint that you're like, I think there's a gap in the market for the cakes, but we also need to offer another kind of thing that we can do to get people in the door and keep them here.
Yeah, what you just said is it. Like, I don't like the idea of turning someone away. Although I'm not going to like appease every single person who walks in the door for my shop, I just don't like the idea of like a group of five people come in for cake and coffee and one of them feels like something savory or a sandwich or something and then they all have to go to someone next door.
Yep.
It's just like, to me, that's bad business. Like if I can facilitate enough variety for most people, I should do it. So yeah, we've added focaccias, which is going to evolve again. So at the moment we bake all our own bread in the morning, so we make focaccia from scratch.
Mate, you're doing it the hard way. Could you not seriously get some bread in?
No, like my Nan used to make everything from scratch, and that's like what we do at Cake Boy. Everything is fresh, like freshly baked, everything, every single thing's made in the premises. So we make the bread in the morning, we cut it up, turn it into sandwiches, and then as the weather cools down a bit, we're going to turn them into like toasties and such and
Get
some really wicked flavors going. So that will develop into another side
kind of
avenue for the business.
So I want to touch on something that I read in my research for this conversation. Glad my journalism degree is going to not going to waste. After your season of MasterChef in 2018,
yes,
you've lost 35 kilos since then.
Yes.
Okay, so what was the motivation for that? Where did that come from? How are we feeling now?
Yeah, it's a really funny story. Like, I suppose, like, myself, I'm like, used to always be the definition of a yo-yo dieter. Like,
yeah, okay.
I'd, like, rock up to a party and my friend's like, oh, my God, you look so good. And then the few weeks later, I'd be in, like, a Snuggie or something. But, yeah, like, after MasterChef, I've always been into the gym and working out. In fact, we go to the same gym.
Yes.
But always have been. But after MasterChef, I was kind of, like, busy but in a slump because I was, like, in this kind of transition period between not knowing what I wanted to do with myself and trying to make something happen. And go at the gym one time, they did this little prize to win a car. If you competed well in this, like, fitness competition of, like, overall health transformation.
So one of those, like, 12-week challenges.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay. Right. And I suppose, like, in my lack of direction, that became my life.
Yep.
And I just did it, and I did it really well.
Okay, so your motivation for losing 35 kilos was to win a car.
And that I did.
So, okay, so when you won, and are you still driving this car now?
Nah, I gave that car to my partner. So
you didn't even want the car?
Nah, I didn't necessarily. I wanted to win the car. I wanted to say that I won the car.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
What kind of car was it?
I was just a Mazda 2.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Is your partner still driving that
yeah,
now?
Yeah, he was driving like an old car, so now he has a nice new Mazda 2.
I can't believe. Okay, so since then, even though you were doing it literally to win a car.
Yeah.
What have you found? Do you feel better? What other benefits have you found from actually doing that?
Yeah, I feel so much better. I just think for me, like, I've got myself to, like, a position in my life where, like, I'm really comfortable with, like, my life between, like, fitness and eating.
Yeah.
It's a very, like,
it's a hard battle.
It's a hard battle, and it's, like, an unhealthy thing to have to think about. I think there's, like, a lot of issues with, like, food and weight and appearance and everything like that. But I've got myself to a position where I'm happy. So I think my diet, my exercising and my lifestyle all just work at the moment.
I guess social media's kind of created that for people. And,
you're right.
You know, we're trying to be like the guys and girls we see on our Instagram grid. And I feel like someone pointed it out to me and I didn't actually realize that this is how I thought until they pointed it out. But I was of the mindset that I always had to earn my food. Like, if I wanted a cheat meal, I had to go to the gym. And if I hadn't been to the gym that day, I couldn't have it. Or I could only have that cheat meal once a week. Like, I felt like I had to earn it. And someone was like, "There's no, like, nothing's going to happen if you don't, if you just get it when you want it." But this, I guess this mindset that we're all in that, you know, you need to look like this.
Well, this is what I mean about the unhealthy obsession about what we eat. And we have to be that way. We have to think about what we eat because, like, as a society, like, I believe we're over consumers. I mean, I have a cake shop.
Yeah.
But, like, everything should be in moderation. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, right now, like, I have, like, a slice of cake a day. But, I mean, I'm also, like, skipping breakfast.
Yes, it all bounces out.
But, you know, like, I also know how my body works now. It's taken me a while to figure that out. And
yep.
I live, like, a life of, like, exercise and respecting what I eat. So I now know what I can do with my body and what I shouldn't. But I kind of, like, yeah, don't necessarily agree that we should think about, yeah, maybe what's the word I'm looking for? Punish ourselves because we have a burger.
Yeah, exactly right. And you don't have to do anything to have the burger. If you want a burger, you can have it.
Just have the burger.
Yeah, just do it. When it comes to starting a business, just do it. And if you want a burger, just do it.
Yeah.
All right, so what does life look like for you now? Like, how much spare time do you have? What hobbies are you doing? What are you watching on Netflix? What are your thoughts on Bryce from Maths? Like,
well, I don't watch TV. I'm like, actually, I lie. I have been finding so much mind-numbing TV to it. Just having the background, like when I switch off after work, I just finished this show on Netflix called like Superstore.
Okay, what's that about?
A shopping center. It's really good. Anyway,
just about a shopping center. Like, yeah, is
it's
it
like I would probably say like Parks and Rec.
Oh, okay, vibe. Right. Oh, I think I've seen it come up in like the, you know, when it comes up at the top and it shows you a preview. Okay.
It's pretty like mind-numbing, but I like it.
You need something like that to switch off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Watched Nailed It last night, which is one of my favorite shows. Have you seen it?
I haven't.
What? What's Nailed It?
No, what's Nailed
It's like amateurs, bakers, people who can't bake at all get put in this competition where they have to make the most extreme cake.
Okay.
And then
how much joy does that bring you after doing a 10-hour day at work?
I love it. I love it so much. It's just so good. But yeah, so I do try to like unwind a bit with TV, but I don't really get the chance to sit down and watch it too much.
Yep.
Most of my spare time at the moment, because my business is only a baby, where, as I said, week 9 now, I don't get too much spare time. So every other second's like running book work or writing rosters or ordering ingredients. So there's a lot of after work stuff that happens, and also trying to like hang out with my dog's partner, just unwind.
I love that you said your dog before your partner. Are you gonna get in trouble for that?
No, that's Monty.
So you mentioned like the book work and doing rosters and stuff and ordering ingredients. Given that you didn't necessarily always have the idea to start a cake shop, the other elements of Cake Boy.
Yep.
How hard has that been to sort of take on for someone who doesn't have like a business degree?
Yeah, I just don't like the idea of admin work. It's like I left years of working at a desk to do more admin work. It drives me crazy. I hate it so much. But stuff like that I'm learning very quickly, like aggressively quickly, is the business. Like that's, as I said to you before, like looking at an avocado as a monetary amount, like that's the most important thing about running the business, is knowing the bookwork, knowing what costs are, what costs coming in comparison to going out is. So I'm learning that really fast. I don't like it.
I'm learning it and I really hate it.
But it's important. So it's something I look at a lot.
Mate, we've come to this end of the podcast where I've got my final two questions. So what's something that no one knows about you?
I didn't really think about this one.
Because I did prep, kind of, but you didn't read the email until as you were walking the door. So you can have some thinking time, but it doesn't have to be no one. Like, not a lot of people would know about you. Got a third nipple. You're left-handed.
Definitely don't.
We could start that rumor, though.
No, let's not. Let's definitely not start that. I think like, oh no, everyone would know that. I'm like, there's heaps of little things like, actually I got one.
Okay.
So I'm like obsessively nerdy, like to the point where I could tell you like what everyone's doing right now. I like love tennis.
Tennis, okay.
Oh my God. Like I think like tennis stars are amazing.
Oh, because you went down to the Australian Open, didn't you? Yep.
I'm like an avid fan. So I know like I've been like literally watching tennis scores in the car like when I was leaving work.
What tournament is even on right now?
Oh my God, it's the Miami Open.
Oh my God. Surely people only care about the four Grand Slams.
No. So Ashley Barty just won against Victoria Azarenka. It's like 6-1, 6-1, 6-2.
Oh my God.
This is what I mean. Like it's a bit obsessive.
Did you play tennis? Were you like a young tennis prodigy and it all went wrong somewhere? Like weird obsession you have with tennis?
I was like 14. I watched like Leighton Hewitt win a match. I was like, this is epic. And then ever since then, I've just been obsessed.
Okay, so when you follow scores, are you only following Australians or you just keep across
No, I have my favourites and Australians.
Have you – you should pitch something to Channel – is it Channel 7 that have the tennis now?
I don't know. Nine.
Nine have the tennis now, yes.
One of them do.
Whoever has the tennis. You should pitch like – you should do like cooking segments with the players where you can interview them.
Oh, that would be really cool actually. I can make them fun stuff.
Yeah, let's just stop recording really soon and we'll workshop this.
Brainshot it.
Yeah. And mate, final question. Hopefully I prepped you on this one long enough. Have you got a big call for me?
Okay, my big call is that I think that Woolworths mud cakes are really good.
Oh my God.
As a baker who bakes cakes,
yep,
I cannot make a mud cake like that. It is good.
Okay, so do you think they cop too much flack, or do you just want to put your Resignal cake boy tick of approval on the mud cake?
Girl, that is like a $5 cake and it tastes so good. So like that is a really good cake. You can't beat that. I reckon, yeah. I grew up on those mud cakes and they're good.
Yeah, when I played cricket, everyone had to like bring something for like afternoon tea. There was always a mud cake every week. Someone was always going to Coles. I saw people on socials, they would get like the caramel one and the chocolate one and put one on top of the other.
Yeah.
And go like...
I've seen like people make wedding cakes out of them. Like buy like 10 of them and stack them for a wedding cake.
Oh my God.
Pretty good idea.
Oh, that would have... Mate, let's not spread that too much. We don't want... we need cake boy to go like, well.
They're horrible. Stay away.
Resignal, mate. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much for your time. And if anyone's local to Newey, please get down to Cake Boy. Give it a try. I promise you'll leave with more cakes than you intended on getting because they look so good. But Resignal, thank you so much for having a chat.
Epic. Thank you.